there persons here that they're visiting Gita Nagari for the first time? Wow. That's a lot. Well, let me introduce you. First, welcome you to Gita Nagari. And wish you a wonderful experience here. One of the things I like to speak about Gita Nagari is factual. Gita Nagari and Sri Sri Radha Damodar combination is very mystical and magical and merciful. As you may know, Sri Sri Radha Damodar, they, although Radha Krishna deities are not normally taken in public and giving transcendental mercy to all kinds of different people, one of Srila Prabhupada's earliest sannyasis, Vishnu Jan Swami, adored and personally worshipped Radha Damodar for years and years, and they were part of a bus program. They went traveling in every nook and corner of the United States, along with a very wonderful servitor, Vishnu Jan Swami, who led kirtan in such a way that it was just heart-melting. And the combination of his kirtan and the presence of Radha Damodar attracted those melted hearts. Many young Western devotees became practitioners of the chanting of the holy name by their mercy and Ventimal Krishna Maharaj's expertise in helping people take that step towards devotion to Krishna. And at the time when the Radha Damodar bus party discontinued traveling, the deities came here and they continued to give their merciful association. So if you somehow pray or open your heart or just dance in kirtan joyfully before Radha Damodar, you'll feel their mercy, you'll sense it palpably. They're very merciful. And this farm community was given its name by our founder Acharya personally. And little history, I won't go into the length of it, but at a time when Srila Prabhupada was still a householder, young man, before he met Bhakti Siddhanta, his spiritual master, he was a Gandhi follower. He was a leading Gandhi follower. So, elevated amongst the followers of Gandhi that at the time of Gandhi's memorial ceremony, Srila Prabhupada was asked to give a special speech in his honor. And in that speech, which the ISKCON devotees didn't find out about until much later. I can't remember exactly when it was, but much later. Prabhupada wrote an essay in honor of Mahatma Gandhi saying, the best way to honor a great person is not by making a statue of that person, memorializing the person, or naming a building after the person, or naming a street after the person, or even naming a city or an airport after that person. But the best way is to take the values that were taught by that great person and create a community that exemplifies those values of that great person. He wrote it several times, three times. I have extracts on my printed out and framed on my desk. The way to honor a great person is this way. And then he went on to say that Gandhi was well known for his love for Bhagavad Gita. He carried Bhagavad Gita with him everywhere, and he read Bhagavad Gita, and he professed Bhagavad Gita. So that place that honors Mahatma Gandhi best would be a place called Gita Nagari. We didn't know about this. The manuscript was discovered later. Then he described what Gita Nagari would be like. What that place, Nagari means village, place where the Gita is sung. Details. And so there was a period of time when this place was known as the New York Farm. Some history of a certain stage in the Hare Krishna movement where Prabhupada indicated that those temples that were well established and had the financial means to do so, he encouraged them to establish a project connected to that temple where they could exemplify teachings of simple living and high thinking, because he teaching and high thinking. So the New York temple did that. In fact, I was part of the Sankirtan party, and then for a while Sankirtan leader, that helped raise the funds to buy the farm. And this is the farm that they bought. It wasn't very close to New York. That was a problem, without the detail. But Prabhupada, from his visit to the Manhattan Temple that was on 55th Street, he got on one of the buses, one of the Radha Damodar buses, and with the sannyasis in the bus, they traveled from Manhattan to this farm, and he called it the Gita Nagari Farm. And then later, they found out where that Gita Nagari came from. So this place had special significance for Srila Prabhupada. And anyway, so those of you that are here for the first time, you're very fortunate. For those of us that have been here many times, we're more fortunate. But we want to share that good fortune with all of you who are here for the first time. May Sri Sri Radha Damodar shower their blessings upon you. And hopefully you'll feel what many, many who have come to take part in functions like this in Gita Nagari also feel. It's a magical place. Wonderful experiences of elevation in your Krishna consciousness and appreciation of the mission of our founder Acharya for such projects as Gita Nagari Farm. So I chose this verse that's projected on the board for our discussion for this evening. And the print is a little small, but I hopefully read it. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Yadrichchaya matkathadau. Jata shraddhastu yah puman. Nanirvino nati sakto. Bhakti yogosya siddhidha. Yadrichchaya matkathadau. Jata shraddhastu yah puman. Na nirvino nati shakto. Bhakti yogosya siddhidha. Yadrishaya matkatadav Jatrashadhastayakuman Nani vrindo nati sakto Yadrichaya. Somehow or other, by good fortune, matkatadao. In the narration, songs, philosophy, dramatic performances, etc., that describe my glories. Jata, awakened. Shraddha, faith. To, indeed. Ya, one who. Puman, a person. Na, not. Nirvinaha, disgusted. Na, not. Ati saktaha, very attached. Bhakti yogaha, the path of loving devotion. Asya, his. Siddhi daha, will award perfection. Translation, if somehow or other by good fortune one develops faith in hearing and chanting my glories, such a person, being neither very disgusted with nor attached to material life, should achieve perfection through the path of loving devotion to me. Little background before I read the purport. This is a section of Srimad Bhagavatam called Uddhava Gita. Some of you may be a little newer and not know what that is. So you know what Bhagavad Gita is. Everyone knows Bhagavad Gita. Everyone here knows Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita is Krishna, Personality of Godhead, Bhagavan, speaking transcendental knowledge to his devotee Arjuna. It comes right in the middle of Mahabharata. It's the jewel within that context of the wonderful literature, Mahabharata itself. Madhvacharya appreciated Mahabharata so much. He wrote in his own literatures that through the mercy of Mahabharata, I have been able to understand the meaning of all the Vedas. In other words, he based much of his writings, by his own acknowledgement, much of his writings, based on Vyasadeva's wonderful exposition of Bhagavad Gita. The long description, but Parashara Muni expresses, Parashara Muni was the father of Vyasadeva. Parashara Muni said, this particular Vyas, Krishna Dvaipayana Vyas, he's Narayan himself. I was also occupying the post of Vyas, Parashara Muni says. We're in the 28th Yuga cycle of Vaivasvata Manu. In the 26th Yuga cycle, Parashara Muni is one of these Chiran Jivas. He lives for a very long time. And he was also Vyas. But he's saying in his writing for the glorification of Mahabharata, that this particular Vyas has written such a wonderful composition in Mahabharata that it's very clear. Whereas the post of Vyasa may be someone empowered. Krishna Dvaipayana Vyasa is Narayan himself. And such a wonderful literature it is Mahabharata. And within that Mahabharata is the transcendental Bhagavad Gita, Krishna's illuminations of himself and the means to reach him through devotion, specifically unalloyed devotional service. So as outstanding as Bhagavad Gita is amongst the writings within the Vedas, this Srimad Bhagavatam is especially also the Nigama Kalpataror Galitam Palam. It's the ripened fruit of the desire tree. Toror means tree. It's the ripened fruit of the desire tree of the Vedas. The Vedas fulfill all desires. We'll see this just within the verse itself and the previous two verses. Vedas supply everything. Knowledge of how to achieve material happiness, how to achieve liberation, and how to achieve loving service to the personality of Godhead. And the ripened fruit of that Vedic literature is Srimad Bhagavatam. And so within the concluding portions of Srimad Bhagavatam, Krishna again instructs, this time Uddhava. Therefore it's called Uddhava Gita. The comparison of Bhagavad, Prabhupada made this comparison. Bhagavad Gita to Srimad Bhagavatam is like undergraduate study and graduate study. You know, for a Western audience, we can easily understand that comparison. Undergraduate study and graduate study. Bhagavatam is the graduate study. So Uddhava Gita is the graduate study of Bhagavad Gita's message. It's not a different message. It's just explained in greater detail and very elaborately and very sweetly, very, very attractively. So this chapter 20 is entitled Pure Devotional Service. It's like chapter 9 of Bhagavad Gita, Most Confidential Knowledge, describing devotional service that's unmixed, pure devotional service. And this is a key verse. This is such an important verse. You saw the abstract that was just presenting what I intended to speak about this evening. This verse is so important. It's commented upon again and again and again. 8 different places in very significant parts of Rupa Goswami's Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Jiva Goswami's Bhakti Sandarbha, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary, Bhakti Vinod Thakur and his writing in Bhakti Aloka. It's a very important verse to understand bhakti and specifically on our topic, the role of faith in the unfolding of bhakti or devotional service. In contrast, the previous verse is the contrasting position of other portions of the Vedas, the Karmakanda portion and the Gyanakanda portion. Some of you may not be familiar with those terms. The 4 Vedas, Rig, Sama, Yajur, and Atharva Veda, the Shruti mantras, link with the procedures of sacrifice for propitiating various devas and devis for achieving something, necessities of life or fulfillment of desires. It requires a qualified brahmana that knows the various mantras and the procedures. And then one can approach that particular qualified brahmana to perform a particular yajna to achieve fulfillment in something. Dharma, artha, kama. Familiar with those. And the fourth one is moksha. So aside from the karma kanda section of the Vedas, there's the moksha section that deals with gyan. So the previous verse says, those that are too much attached to material enjoyment, the karma kanda section is suitable for them. Those that are too much detached, like repulsed, repulsively disgusted, frustrated, or whatever, with material existence, their suitable portion of the Vedas for them is the Gyanakanda. Then comes this verse. And I'll just summarize what it says, read the purport, and then go into what our acharyas have to say. It starts with the word that's not on the screen right now, but yadrichchaya, that's the first word. And yadrichchaya, thank you, is translated as somehow or other. Meaning, there's no apparent material cause, because in this world, this is the world of cause and effect. Everything affects something, and it's a natural question. What's the cause of that? Like the whole field of engineering, whatever it may be. Electrical engineering, chemical engineering, mechanical engineering, civil engineering, this engineering and that engineering. And technology. Information technology and this technology and that technology. It's simply dealing with cause and effect. A push and a pull. And then some outcome. You study the push and pull of material nature. You become a scientist, and you can make a product and sell it to a some company, some commercial company, and make a living called economic development. Just by understanding the push and pull of material nature. So researcher and product developer, and they have nice names. So what is that? That doesn't have a material cause. Well, bhakti is one of those things that doesn't have a material cause. So, it's somehow or other, causelessly, by the causeless mercy of a devotee. So, question, what's the cause of the causeless mercy of a devotee? Answer, it doesn't have a cause, it's causeless. Question, huh? What is it that's causeless? Answer, mercy of a devotee is causeless. It's just the nature of bhakti is, bhakti is merciful. Srimati Radharani is merciful. And those who are her expansions are merciful, like Bhakti Devi. And Bhakti Devi is merciful. And Bhakti Devi may be filling the heart of one bhakta who is carrying bhakti. And that bhakta feels merciful or compassionate, or they give bhakti to someone else. That's how. The causeless mercy. That we, spent some time in Chicago discussing the state, 9 stages of bhakti. A little book, a little skinny book, written by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. The first chapter is how does bhakti begin, and he uses the same yadrichchaya, somehow or another. And the conclusion is bhakti causes bhakti. Because bhakti is independent. Just as Krishna is independent, bhakti is as independent as Krishna, because bhakti is of the Lord's internal potency, and he's independent. Anyway, it's a nice subject. Somehow or other. Yadrichchaya. And then the Yadrichchaya is Matkata Adau. Kata. It's Krishna speaking, so it's Matkata. It's Krishna Kata. If somehow or other one develops shraddha, faith in the topics of Krishna. Now how is that going to happen? Answer, you have association with someone who has faith in the topics of Krishna. That's how it happens. And then ask the question, well, how does that come about? The answer is, somehow or other, the causeless mercy of a devotee. And devotees are merciful, not just because they're told to be merciful, instead of, you know, mean or, you know, miserly. They're merciful by nature. Those that are, that have bhakti, they're by nature merciful. So they give their mercy. So, and then what do devotees do? They talk about Krishna. Matkata, or Krishna katha. Or, like here, songs, narrations, philosophy, dramatic performances. But what's the essence of them? The glories of Krishna. So if one somehow or other gets the association of one who does that and develops faith in that, mat kata adau. Adau means it's like etc. Beginning with the chanting and hearing activities and everything else that follows the chanting and hearing activities, which is devotional service. They have, for one who has such faith, then there's a qualification. So, such a person being neither very disgusted with nor attached to. They're neither in this extreme. I gotta have sense gratification. Or, I'm disgusted, I want out of here. But someone that's neither too attached and too detached. That person is a fit recipient for that faith in hearing, etc. Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam, the hearing and chanting about Krishna. And such a person, by continuing, because they have faith, they continue to associate with those who have such faith and are engaged in those activities done faithfully and sincerely, then they progress in spiritual life. Siddhi-da, to the stage of perfection. Nice, huh? Nice verse. Important verse. I gathered together about 18 pages of commentary just on this verse. I plan to read a little bit of it, not all of it, but just a sampling, a little sampler of some Mahaprasad from our great acharyas. You'll want some more. Okay, so here's commentary. Purport. If somehow or other one gets the association of pure devotees of the Lord, and hears from them the transcendental message of Lord Krishna, then one has the chance to become a devotee of the Lord. As mentioned in the previous verse, those who become disgusted with material life take to impersonal philosophical speculation and rigorously try to stamp out any trace of personal existence. Those who are still attached to material sense gratification try to purify themselves by offering the fruits of their ordinary activities to the Supreme. A first class candidate for pure devotional service, on the other hand, is neither completely disgusted with nor attached to material life. He does not desire to pursue ordinary material existence any further because it cannot award real happiness. Nevertheless, a candidate for devotional service does not give up all hope for perfecting personal existence. A person who avoids the two extremes of material attachment and impersonal reaction to material attachment, and who somehow or other gets the association of pure devotees, faithfully hearing their message is a good candidate for going back home, back to Godhead, as described here by the Lord. Not just they're candidate for devotional service, but they're candidate for perfection. That's what the verse is saying. So would you like written about this?
Yes.
Yes? I hope so, because that's what we're going to do. We'll start with Jiva Goswami, who points to this verse, number 8, and then to two other verses in this chapter that four other acharyas also refer to. In other words, they go well together, and there's an important message within them. And I'll try to summarize first. Jiva Goswami says it forwards, backwards, sideways, and then repeats it, that faith is that which gives the results of bhakti. It's not exactly, conversely, it's not exactly the activity that gives the result. Because in fruitive activity, it's the activity that gives the result. You know, you have to cook. So you get the vegetables and the spices and the this and the that, and you put it in a pot, turn on the flame, and you cook. Then you get sabji or whatever it is that you're making. The fruit is the result of the activity. Jiva Goswami's point is faith is the cause of the result of bhakti or activities in devotion. So operable is how much faith we have in what we're doing. That's how he starts. Then he goes around and does it in reverse. But let me do the forwards before we go to do the reverse. He's wonderful. He uses a little definition of terms. He uses this terminology, qualification, which in Sanskrit is adhikar. Those of you from India, there's many here from India, you know the term adhikar. The usage of the term here is qualification. So who's qualified for bhakti? Neither too much or too much. Someone who's not an extremist or fanatic, this way, that way. If, you know, a little bit balanced. And so the emphasis is this qualification. So it's like the soil in which the seed is planted, neither too much or too much. So then the seed that's planted is faith. Faith, that's the receiving part, and then the seed that's given is faith in the hearing and chanting. And that comes from association of those that have faith in hearing and chanting. Faith in Krishna Katha. And what happens when you engage in kirtan, or when you engage in discussing Srimad Bhagavatam together? Something happens. And it's lovable. It's palpable. It's invigorating, it's cleansing, it's, let's do more of it. It feels right. It nourishes my faith in reaching the goal. When we were discussing Madhurya Kandambani, the topic is the 9 stages. When Vishwanath discusses the first item, which is faith, it's directly related to our theme for the weekend here. Faith he presents it in two different ways. One, there's a strong desire to progress in self-realization. And one may not even know what self-realization is, especially in the beginning. But a strong desire to go in that direction. Then another way is there's faith and there's a higher reality. I don't know exactly what it is, but there's something more than just, you know, the everyday run around stuff, you know. There's a higher reality. I want to experience it. I want to enter into it. I want to be connected with that higher reality somehow. I don't know what it is, but I know it exists. I want to. So that's this preliminary faith. And when there's association with the devotees, there's this, aha, it's serving Krishna. Bhakti awakens through association of devotees. Somehow, some way, a desire to serve Krishna, that then that's the seed of faith in serving Krishna. Preliminary faith is I don't know what it is. In the beginning stages that faith awakens, it's service to Krishna somehow. Then one wants to know how, what's pleasing to Krishna, and how is it done in such a way it's pleasing to Krishna, like that. And then it grows and grows and grows. So that's important to us. We have a, you know, before we get rolling, the terminology is clear. There is the fertile ground of neither too much nor too much. And then there's the seed that serving Krishna with love and devotion is the greatest, it's the highest position, it's the position of real happiness. It's who we really are. We're, our realization of that may be quite immature, but some inkling, some faith, some connection with that. And by the means of hearing and chanting about Krishna, that grows. So that's what this particular section, he calls it the role of faith. This particular chapter, or anuchet, is the Sanskrit term. And right away, he discusses the verse before this one and then this one. And so I just read. Results arise according to the determination, sankalpa, according to the determination of the performer. And he quotes this verse. His translation is a little different. If by unexpected association with devotees one develops faith in my topics, that person, being neither very disgusted with nor attached to material life, is qualified for bhakti and will achieve perfection. So now, the cause of the results from the performance of bhakti is faith, and faith alone. He then quotes a verse from Canto 1, Chapter 2. Many of you know the connection of the Bhagavatam. Shushusho shraddhadanasya. There's this word shraddha. Shushusho shraddhadanasya. Vasudeva katha. Mud katha. Vasudeva katha ruchi. Syan mahatsevaya vipra punyatirta nishevanat. O Brahmana. This is Sutta speaking to the sages. Attraction for topics concerning Krishna will arise by service to the great devotees, followed by faith, then by surrender to the feet of the guru, then by the desire to hear. Nice. So it's a supporting verse to his point of view, or his rendering of how bhakti, what's the role of faith in bhakti. This verse is explained later by the Lord. So now this is the, later in the chapter 20 of this 11th canto. I hope I'm not losing people. It's the foundation to help us understand the role of faith. And our great acharyas are helping us. So these two verses are text 27-28 from chapter 20. Having developed faith in topics about me, Krishna says to Uddhava, and being disgusted with fruitive activities, a devotee knows that all enjoyments are filled with misery. But he isn't able to give them up. Sound familiar? Still, with affection for me, with faith, and he continues worshiping me, while at the same time partaking of those enjoyments which give rise to suffering, yet condemning them. This is the, you know, it's very, this message here is very similar to the message of last year's Gitanagari retreat, acceptance and progress. If you remember that, some of you attended. I'm here. I know the goal is there, and I have faith in the goal, and I have appreciation for the process to get to the goal. I know that back there, there's unwanted activities and unwanted attachments to material objects, and I know it doesn't bring happiness, but the honest statement of my present position is there's some attachment to those things. I know that involving myself with those things is going to bring not happiness, but some misery. But let me continue with the process of worship. I'll continue progressing towards the goal and accept those things that are temporary and limited with the faith that my attachment for those things will gradually diminish, and rather than being artificial and pretentious, gradually I'll become reduced or slackened in my attachment for those things. I'll make my progress slow and steady, based upon that faith. Nice. So, here's Jiva Goswami's commentary. The person develops faith in topics about me and other related items. He thinks, this is best. He is disgusted with other activities, however he cannot give up objects of enjoyment, which are remnants of results of pious activities from previous lives. In Madhurya Kandambani, there's four categories of anarthas based upon where they arise from. One is unwanted things of the heart that arise from past sinful activities. That's easy. Past sinful activities lead to propensities for more sinful activities. That's an anartha in the heart. Here is describing the second one. Anarthas that arise from past pious activities. One can be attached to be the enjoyer of those things, even though I know they're limited and temporary. It's not going to satisfy me. My real identity is spirit soul. I don't belong in this material world. But I'm attached to these things, although I know they're limited, temporary, and don't bring the real happiness they're supposed to, or people that are chasing after them want from them. But I have this attachment, so I'll go on with the devotional service to Krishna. These things may surround my life, and gradually, they will their significance will diminish. By as the light of the morning sun becomes stronger and stronger, the illumination of the firefly becomes less and less. Yes. But in complete dark, there goes the firefly. Zoom. Wow. Because there's no daylight. When the daylight comes, it's insignificant. Jiva Goswami goes on. This is the devotee's initial state. This person should worship me. This means he is qualified for ananya bhakta, ananya bhakti. Ananya bhakti means undivided. Listen carefully. What he's saying is simply that element of faith. The topic for our weekend is the role of faith in the unfolding of bhakti. That person, even they may not, they may still have worldly attachments, but they having that faith in the process of bhakti, carrying one to Krishna, that person is qualified for undivided devotional service. Anya means other, and ananya means nothing other, like, you know, squeaky clean. Avyabhichari bhakti, undivided devotional service, qualified based upon that faith and the hearing and chanting activities that will carry me to that position. Whereas another person may be qualified for jnana, and that person will develop vairagya. This is because bhakti is independent of other factors, and it, because it has its own shakti. What does that mean? Bhakti has a power that knowledge doesn't have. Knowledge has a power of detachment. His couplet, Jnana Vairagya, it's known throughout the Vedas. Bhakti has shakti far beyond what Jnana has. Detachment is a subset of that, but far beyond that subset of detachment is it completely, it dissolves, it has the potency to dissolve false ego in the material mind. Let's celebrate. No false ego. What's that like? No more material mind. What would that be like? We're attached to those things. What will we do without them? Just, you know, stay on the bhakti channel and you'll find out. It can carry you to undivided, nothing but Krishna devotional service. Even though divided may be the present state. How what's the vehicle or the qualification? Faith. Then he gives other quotes from, again, from this chapter 20. Krishna's teaching Arjuna about pure devotional service. Therefore, Krishna says to Uddhava, for a devotee engaged in bhakti with mind fixed on me, the cultivation of knowledge and renunciation is generally not beneficial for bhakti. What is? Cultivation of attachment for hearing and chanting, because that will be a byproduct. We don't independently search for those things. We seek for attachment to Krishna through the medium of hearing and chanting about him. The necessary detachment will follow. We put the horse before the cart, not the cart before the horse. And the cart will pull knowledge and detachment, no problem. Put bhakti in the front. Then Krishna goes on speaking to Uddhava, everything that can be achieved by karma, penance, jnana, vairagya, mystic yoga, charity, dharma, and all other auspicious means of perfecting life is easily achieved by my devotee through bhakti. Does that sound familiar? There's a verse in Bhagavad Gita that describes Buddhi Yoga. Vyavasayatmika Buddhi Ekeha Kuru Nandana. You can look it up later if you're not familiar with Bhagavad Gita. It's 241. The first thing in the purport Prabhupada discusses is this point. Lord Chaitanya said, faith means that by achieving one thing, all other desirable things will be accomplished. That's what faith means. And Krishna bhakti is what a devotee has faith in. If I could somehow just please Krishna, everything else. That's the horse before the cart. Everything else desirable. Everything else. Everything else. Everything else. Well, what about everything else? Two evenings ago, I was in Orlando before going to Alachua for this nice wedding. Two young devotees were married. And somebody came up to me afterwards. They were doing a little study on what some of our senior devotees like as their favorite verse. So I was asked, what's your favorite verse? I have so many favorite verses. How long do you want to stand here and write them down? But they were really enthusiastic to get a favorite verse. So I said, when Krishna discloses what he feels, what Krishna discloses, what he feels towards his devotees who extend loving service unto him, those are the verses I like the most. He said, well, which one? So the verse in which Krishna says, I preserve what they have and I carry what they lack. Many of you know this nice verse from Bhagavad Gita. Yoga kshema vahamyaham. Yoga kshema vahamyaham. Whatever we have, Krishna preserves. Whatever we require, Krishna provides. We don't have to worry about it. The one thing that is of concern for the devotee is Krishna and Krishna's glories and speaking of Krishna and hearing about Krishna, remembering Krishna and giving bhakti of Krishna to others and being situated in bhakti ourselves and everything. We make practical arrangements in pursuance of that. You know, like such a nice example is Lord Nityananda deciding to give the holy name to Jagai and Madhai. And his reasoning was, Lord Chaitanya will help them take the holy name, even though they're drunkards and debauchers and murderers and low-class people of the worst quality. But when Lord Chaitanya makes them devotees, everyone will know the glories of Lord Chaitanya. Haridas, let's go. Let's go find Jagai and Madhai and give them the holy name. Haridas said, you're crazy. They're wild men. Lord Nityananda. Then, and when they were delivered, Lord Nityananda and Lord Chaitanya had a little debate. It was because of your mercy that they were saved. No, it was because of your mercy that they were saved. No, it was because of your mercy that they were saved. No, it was because of your mercy that they were saved. The compassion of the devotee carries the mercy of Krishna. That's how bhakti begins. The compassionate, so we're not qualified like Lord Nityananda, either to receive or to give, but that which touches your heart, you have to give. It just happens like that. Somehow it happens like that. Bhakti that awakens in the heart has that quality. We want to give. We want to receive more. We want to give more. It just works like that. So he goes on. Jiva Goswami. This is Bhakti Sandarbha, one of his chapters, Anuchets. This means that bhakti does not even depend on indifference to karma. That indifference will arise by faith that bhakti is the supreme method. Yes? But those later verses from chapter 20. Thus, the qualification of being disgusted with karma merely explains this phenomenon. In the case of bhakti, faith alone is the cause of bhakti's fruit. Another way of saying the same thing, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur writes in his Madhuryan Kintamani that there's 9 stages of bhakti, and each one of them has a different Sanskrit term, but actually it's just divisions of faith. Faith and 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 faith. 9. And the top one we call prema. It's just the mature most stage of faith. But it's just the continuation of this preliminary faith combined with the association of those who are carrying bhakti within their heart. And he concludes, without faith, ananya bhakti will not occur. And then he flips it around the other way. Are you ready? He says, it's actually not exact flips that are, it's just a refinement. He says there are, in addition to 9 stages of bhakti, there's 9 angas or limbs or manifestations of bhakti. They begin with hearing and chanting. Yes. One of our young devotees must know this. Do you know the Shravanam Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam, Padasevanam, Archanam, Bandhanam, Dasyam, Sakyam, Atmanivedanam? Did you miss one? You got it. Okay, there's 9 processes or angas. So Jiva Goswami goes down a path. I won't go through it. I invite you to read. In fact, I'll circulate the document. I'll give it to, who do I give it to? Sranga Thakur. And those of you that registered, you can get a copy. It's just taking things from our commentaries of our acharyas. You can read it at your leisure, because it does take going over it multiple times because it's subtle. So the next point that he makes is, while faith is essential for undivided devotion, it's not to be considered as an anga or a limb of bhakti, like hearing and chanting and remembering and praying and worshipping and so forth. Worshipping Padasevanam, worshipping the lotus feet. It's not one of those 9. It's not anga number 10. It's not unto itself. It's intrinsic within all of them. And it's possible, he goes on, to say that bhakti can be unknowingly performed, which means without faith. Without faith. Like an example is Ajamila. He didn't chant with the idea, I'll call the name of Narayana because here come the Yamadutas and I have faith in Narayana and they'll protect me from the Yamadutas, or he will protect me from the Yamadutas. It wasn't like that. Or Shishupal didn't have faith in Krishna. He had animosity toward Krishna. But he got benefit from the chanting of the holy name. Narada Muni confirmed. How did he get liberation? Because of the power of the holy name. He didn't have faith in the holy name. But he got the power of the holy name because he was chanting Krishna's name over and over again. Or Hela Namaba says, singing the name without even intending. Like, my first contact with the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra was through the musical Hair. I didn't even know what New York City was, what to speak of musicals in New York City. But somehow I found out about, I don't remember how it happened, I found out about in the Norton Union on the fourth floor, there was a record room, and I heard this. I would go and check out the album and just play that song over and over again from the musical Hair. They weren't singing glorification of Krishna with faith, but there was power. I was somehow attracted. I don't know. I don't even know how it happened, but somehow it happened. So even in derision or in scorn or in laughter, there isn't time. When Radha Govinda were installed in our temple in New York, it was in not our present temple in Brooklyn, it was another rented property in Brooklyn on Henry Street, 439 Henry Street. And the building that we were renting was right across the corner from a schoolyard. And of course, a school inside the schoolyard and a big, tall, wrought iron fence. And we would come back from Harinam every day around the lunchtime. And the kids were at recess during their lunchtime. And they would stand by the gate and laugh at us. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Joking. Not faith. No faith. Fast forward in time, and I met one of those school children something, 15, 18 years later in the Detroit airport. I was waiting for catching a connecting plane with Northwestern. And he was a Northwestern employee, and he came walking down the court, corridor with all of his friends laughing and laughing and laughing. And then he saw me and he stopped like he saw a ghost. And he told his friends, "You go ahead, I want to speak to him." And he walked up to me and said, "Are you Hare Krishna?" I said, "Yes." He said, "Oh no." "Why do you say oh no?" He said, "We were so bad." "What do you mean?" "I used to live in Brooklyn." I said, "So did I." He said, "Oh no." We were part of those kids that lived in this, went to school, and we waited for you, came by, and you were singing your, playing your drums and tambourines and singing, and we'd go and make fun of you guys. He said, "Yeah, I remember. I was with that group that came by every day." I said, "Oh no." "And we used to throw Molotov cocktails through the windows when you'd have your chanting inside, and we'd burn your cars when you parked in the parking of the spaces in the street, and we were really bad, and you were so nice to people. You were always feeding people and taking care of people. We were so bad to you." I said, "I can remember." "Oh no." But that melody, it never left my mind. He said, just in the middle of I'm doing anything and Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Just today I was getting out of work and it came in my mind and it started singing. And all my friends started laughing at me. Just like we used to laugh at you. And then I saw you. Oh no. But even in laughter and derision and scorn, the potency of the holy name, even without faith, has profound effect. Who can say? So then I felt that Krishna was speaking through him. He said, Whatever you do, don't give up that chanting of the street. Said, you know, it helps people, and you know, you're doing good work. I gotta go now. Felt like Krishna sent him. I guess he felt like Krishna sent me to remind him of Krishna somehow. So even without faith, so he goes through this thing, even without faith, bhakti can begin. Then he goes back and says, for the undivided devotion, the fruit, there must be faith. Because the fruit of bhakti is resting upon or delivered by faith. That's a whole section. And then I'll circulate this, you know, the other quotes, references, similar references to Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu and other things and other things, and our acharyas referring to these same verses on a specific point, at least the role of faith, how bhakti begins. We need the association of devotees. It's not that we have faith and we don't need the association of devotees. See you guys later. We require the association of devotees. That helps nourish the faith in the process of, specifically, the process of hearing and chanting together. Sankirtan. That's the Yuga Dharma, Sankirtan. So in the course of the weekend, different speakers are going to reveal different messages on this theme. So please make your best effort to attend. Those devotees that are looking after the activities for the children, they're really enthused. I mean, they're really enthused to engage them in nice devotional activities, and part that it will assist parents being able to absorb these messages. Pray to Radha Damodar for their mercy, that these messages of nourishing of your faith in the process of bhakti and the goal of bhakti will become strengthened in the course of this weekend. Thank you very much. Any comments or questions? We'll have a little time and then we'll have kirtan. Yes?
Gurumanj, this verse is speaking about being balanced to be a receiver of bhakti, yeah, and then not being too disgusted with material life as well as not being too attached to material,
yeah,
life. My question is, I see myself sometimes being disgusted with features of Kali Yuga, such as slaughterhouses and silly bickering and things like that. Is that also in the category that this verse is talking about?
Well, as you know from the Bhagavatam and Prabhupada's purports in the Bhagavatam, he's very strong on that topic, isn't he? So, yad yad acharati shrestas. It's a wholesome regard for the improper position of material attachment, and then especially when it goes into the lower modes of nature, violence and the products of violence, the byproducts of violence, wars, and, you know, Prabhupada speaks of that. At the same time, the code of a kshatriya. So, my understanding of how, from reading these sections, it's that focus goes to the products of fruitive work with the thought of finding happiness in the products of fruitive work, with, you know, not too much attachment for them. You know, the disgust is, on the other side, it's a wholesale disgust about material existence. In the language of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, I think the term he uses is abhinivesh, which means the opposite is this pervasive attraction for material enjoyment as opposed to a specific object, pervasive propensity for enjoyment. And then there's the other, pervasive disgust. You're like, you know, sour and grumpy and, you know, like that. As opposed to sinful activities and the unnecessary suffering that's inflicted on others due to sinful activities. There's a distinction. Maharaj Parikshit, pure devotee, when he heard the bull was being, he was really angry, charging out of the palace with his whole army to capture this person, punish him. So it's not that we, you know, our sensibilities are to become just pablum, not too, you know, a moderate, not too much, just kind of pablum, just different. Anything else? Yes?
Maharaj, when you are describing about somehow or the other by good fortune, one develops faith.
Yeah.
My question was, for a person who doesn't have that transcendental pious credits which are obtained by performing devotional service in their previous lifetimes, is it possible for such a kind of a person to develop faith?
Sure, through association. That's how it begins. It can be nourished in the same way, but that's how it begins. Through association. That's how it becomes awakened if it was done in the past. Through association. What do you think? You think not?
Yes, I was just thinking, in the first place, to come in contact with devotees, is there something, material cause for that person, for such a kind of a person to come in contact with devotees?
With big letters. N-O. And take, as, you know, the classic is Jagai Madhai. And there's those little Jagais and Madhais of today compared to Jagai and Madhai of Mahaprabhu's time. I don't need to elaborate because the answer is no. You just have to be standing in the right place at the right time, and somebody that's got bhakti in their bhakti vessel just bumps into us and spills some on us, that's all. Oh, excuse me. Okay. Anything else? Yes.
Maharaj, bhakti is independent, but we also heard that the qualifications of not being too attached or too detached is required to make progress. So is the independence of bhakti just limited to the initial, you know, adal shraddha, and after that it's dependent on?
No. Bhakti can appear anywhere. Here's how Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur deals with this question. You gotta listen carefully because it's subtle. The Madhyama Bhakta, You know the term, Madhyama, the middle stage of devotion? There's the beginning stage. There's the middle stage. And there's the advanced stage. So in the beginning stage, characteristics are, one sees that God exists within the place of worship. The church, the mosque, the synagogue, the temple, God's there. And one goes to those places because God's there. And one offers prayers and does godly things in God's place because God's there. Such a person in this beginning stage doesn't understand so much how God is in the heart of other living entities, how those who are especially devoted to Him, they're very dear to Him. They don't have that discrimination yet. You just go to the place of worship and worship, and then leave, and then they do their material activities. It's called secularism in Christianity. You've heard that term before? So, then the middle stage that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu very quickly engaged, and Prabhupada very quickly engaged us in, is there's many different things that are characteristic of the distinction, but one of them is God is to be worshipped, and then there's devotees who we are to make intimate friendships with, and then there's those who are innocent, and to extend kindness and help to go to bhakti to the innocent, and then there's the outrageous, atheistic, antagonistic against God personalities, we're to carefully avoid their association. And then amongst the devotees are different categories. So the Madhyama, that middle stage person, he makes distinctions. Bhakti doesn't make distinctions. The Madhyama is enjoined. Go on Sankirtan. And watch out for the non-devotee, atheists. So Vishwanath says, Krishna gives power of attorney to that Madhyama and says, you can give me to whoever you like. But then he's enjoined to make friends with the devotees and give mercy to the innocent and avoid the non-devotees. In this way, Vishwanath says, the independence of bhakti is preserved. And then we find bhakti is awakened in different persons and not in others. Because the distributor is not the Kanishna nor the Uttama. The Uttama is seeing everyone's engaged in Krishna service. He doesn't go on Sankirtan. You follow? So that happens. For example, supposing supposing you go to the marketplace and you're, you know, walking through the counter with your bead bag and your tilak on, and somebody goes, you know, excuse me, what's that stuff on your forehead? And, you know, you're mumbling something. What is, are you praying? And then you can say, this marks the body as a temple of God. You follow? You're just being yourself. But you know, somebody innocently approaches and you can share with him. It happens to me all the time. And it's just like, you know, here's one of my favorites. Checking in at a check-in counter for an airlines. Every now and then I do that. And, you know, the lady behind the counter smiles and says, are you a Buddhist monk? And I say, no, I'm a Krishna monk. Oh, what's that? You know, she's doing, you know, doing her thing. What's that? Said, well, we worship Krishna. And he is the speaker of Bhagavad Gita. Here's a copy. Oh, thank you. That was very nice of you. And then, you know, may I ask, what's that mark on your forehead? is a mark that means that it's the body is the temple of God. Inside, you know, the Bible teaches the kingdom of God is within you. That's what this means. Oh. Well, here's your boarding pass. And, you know. Is there a temple here? He said, yeah, I'll give you the address. Oh, very nice. I have a friend, they're doing yoga. They would probably like to. Again, just, you know, give somebody a little beginning. That's the Madhyama Bhakta that's giving bhakti. And their devotional life has begun. Because they said Krishna's name. The idiot, you get the idea. It can be just, it's an innocent beginning. Or, you know, near the temple where you reside, there's a monthly Sankirtan festival, and you get up enough courage to go out with the other devotees and distribute some literature on the monthly Sankirtan festival. That's a Madhyama function. Kanishthas don't do that. Madhyamas, you get the idea. And that's how bhakti begins for some people. And then what's needed more, a whole other weekend, is the necessity of taking that seed of bhakti that begins and nurture it properly. But anyway, role of faith. Does that answer your question?
Maharaj, my question was more towards
the... I didn't answer your question.
Towards the end, no, that answers some of the question, Maharaj, but towards, after someone has received mercy from a Madhyama Adhikari,
yeah.
And someone is trying a little bit, so after that is bhakti then, because we heard that the qualifications to progress and become perfect in devotional service is not to be too detached and not to be too attached. So at that point, can we understand bhakti to be not independent then and dependent on the person's endeavor?
Bhakti is nourishing. So depending upon our attachment to Krishna, which is the fruit of bhakti, we're going, one, we'll get more of the mercy of bhakti. So bhakti maintains her independence always. But the, you know, how much we zero in on the shelter of the mood of serving Krishna, will get more of that fullness of bhakti. But all the while, bhakti maintains independence. I hope I've answered your question now. Maybe not. I'm not sure I understood your question. That's why I'm asking. Kind of, but not completely. Maybe we should deal with it later. After class, you come see me. Anything else? Okay. We'll end there. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.